Perfect intro, though, Kevin.
Hey there, welcome to 8TL and 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. Tonight we're starting in Miami, where the Hawks defeated the Heat in a play-in game. Glenn, do you want a hug from Kyle Lowry, or are you afraid that he might pull you down?
I'm afraid, you know, step one would probably be okay, you know, but I'm afraid of, you know, if he needs a foul, I'm toast. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm just going to probably steer clear of that.
Yeah, no hugs when they're in the bonus.
No, or within a foul or two of the bonus, you know. So, you know, and even if you're walking around him, he'll trip you. I joked on Twitter when he got a bloody lip in the first half, there was at least a 50% chance he just punched himself in the face. That's what happened. but I mean, his shooting in the second half kept the Heat in the game, right?
Really, in the first half, like his foul drawing in the first half, like it worked, you know, because some of them were questionable, but some of them were legitimate, and they really needed that. That made it a game.
And this is kind of tangential, and we'll get to our other guests here in a second before too long. But, you know, apart from about 3 minutes in the early fourth quarter, I thought the officiating was good, you know, the whole game. You know, there were like three fouls, I thought, you know, you could see the Heat were like, oh man, we're losing by 8 or 10 or whatever it was. We got to get ourselves into the bonus. Jimmy starts falling down. You know, Kyle starts doing his bumper car thing. I call it Kyle Lowry a human bumper car is what I call him. And stuff like that. And the refs kind of fell for it, you know, for, you know, 4 or 5 possessions, and then it got fixed, you know, so can't really complain about that. But a fun game, you know, for Hawks fans, for sure. They're pretty solid in play-in games so far. And they get a nice break this time, where last year they had to go into that Miami series just exhausted. So, but you know, we also have at Blog Hawk here with us, Wes.
The great Wes Morton.
And I don't know if he's officially here or not, but Brad Rowland at BT Rowland, Locked On Hawks, all that good stuff. So, guys, what did you guys see tonight? What were the kind of the big 1 to 2 kind of reasons you saw that the Hawks got this win tonight?
I would say, I mean, something the Hawks have struggled with all year long is just communicating in both half court and transition defense, getting aligned, you know, when they kind of meet a screen and roll, they're not the best team at getting guys rotated over, getting a dig, moving around, but they seem to pretty much stay attached. Like their screen navigation was, you know, some of the best I'd seen all year. You know, basically, you know, the Heat hit a few threes. They got open for a little bit, but they weren't giving up too much in the paint. Some of that was individual effort. Some of that was just looked like they really operated as a team, especially through the first quarter and 10 minutes in the first half. They really looked like they were shutting them off, not giving up second chances, and then grabbing the rebound and basically just taking it and going, getting to a point guard, and they got a few transition opportunities. So you can tell they kind of had a game plan to, you know, try to funnel some pick and rolls to the side. Don't let them get out the middle. Don't let, you know, Butler or Hero get isolated sort of in their sweet spots. They like to get into the paint, do their kind of, you know, pull up game from there. But looked like they really operated well as a team on team defense, got out, spread the floor on the opposite end. And, you know, some of it was Miami got some good looks. They shot pretty poorly from three. Atlanta got some good looks. They shot well from three. So some of that's just the kind of the nature of a single basketball game, but definitely have to like the energy they brought for the majority of the game, absent, you know, late in the second quarter, sort of midway through the third quarter, it started to get a little uneasy there if you're a Hawks fan, but they definitely kind of brought it for the vast majority of this game and took it to a team that's kind of had their number over the last couple of years.
And Brad, I'm going to guess you want to talk about Clint Capella, just a hunch.
I would like to. Hello, friends. Listen, I this is kind of off brand for me. The Capella thing is not off brand for me. I love Clint. He was fantastic tonight. That goes without saying. I think it's it shows, it's one of those nights where it's like insane that I'm still getting tweets about how Clint should be playing. It's like, you guys watch this game by any chance? I know Nekka's been great.
And it, just close the game with like 18 straight minutes of a combo. I mean, until Kong was great. A heap on the floor.
Was great. Kong was great. But like, guys, like he was fantastic. I don't know. Anyway, this is the off-brand part that I want to make sure I get in there before I disappear from this podcast. And I appreciate you having me. The Hawks were like, I don't go to outworking very often and like out physicaling. Like the Hawks were just more physical than the Heat. Like they were just, and I didn't anticipate that happening. Like obviously they have a size advantage, especially when Miami comes out and they're playing Jimmy at the four with three guards. And like, that's a good signal that it could be that kind of night for the Hawks. But like, they just out physical them all night long. The glass is the most obvious way you can look at that, where the Hawks set a literal season high in offensive rebounds. Like that doesn't happen on accident, but they just like 150-50 balls all night long, and they were just like, they kind of outheated the Heat. I mean, if you told me the Hawks were going to shoot like they shot in this game from three in particular and win by 11 on the road, that's an impossible thought for me to have. Like, if all you told me was the Hawks are going to shoot 10 of 41 from three, I'm like, all right, the Hawks are going to lose by 12. Like,
and leave 10 plus points on the free throw line, too.
Yeah. I mean, if the way they shot from three in the free throw line, you're supposed to lose. If you're this Hawks team, the way that they're built, they lose this game way more often than not, usually, if that's all you know about the game. They were just so good at everything else. And the possession battle, like Wes said, defensively. But, like, it was impressive the way they just, like, willed it. I mean, they really just outworked them. It was impressive.
I think one thing that I like about the Hawks tonight was, like, they were dreadful at the end of the first half. They were dreadful at the end of the second half. And to me, that says they were just so freaking tired that their brain shut off from, like, lack of oxygen. Like, I think they were just gassed and – every way, mental, physical, whatever. And I do think that they just kind of sold out to get that kind of peak performance. But it's really helpful to have three non-centers in Bay, Collins, and Jalen Johnson to just be as physical as they are. They're all like, you know, in different ways. Collins is like the vertical, Bay is like the bowling ball, and Johnson's a little bit of both, but that just, it can create some physicality problems when teams try to go small.
Yeah, it's funny. Those sequential turnovers by Trey and DeJounte,
those were all timers.
Those were – Kevin, when you told us about the pick six turnover you gave to lose the court the other day, when I saw those plays today, I was like, that had to be painful, a painful reminder – for Kevin, of a moment, you know, holding court. Yeah,
I lost a pickup game yesterday. Just threw the ball to the other team. Awful.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that those were so bad, but the Miami was so defeated by that point, they just couldn't do anything with them. I mean, those are the kinds of turnovers that you're down 11 with like two to go or whatever. And like that is opening the door, and Miami was just like, I can't do anything with this. You know,
funny. Jalen had one too, and it's like, the one that Jalen had was like a real actual problem, because like the one way in which he has never meshed with Trey is like bringing the ball up, because he's got this constant conflict between grab and go versus, you know, Trey needs to be the ball master. He wants to run the show, and they've always sort of had that, you know, tug of war is too strong of a thing, but, you know, just sort of unease where they're just kind of checking each other, or who's going to bring it up this time. And Jalen was like, okay, I'm going to give it to you. And he just did it so deliberately. The Butler's like, yeah, please, please. And thank you. I'm going to take this one.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I, and then Brad and I talked about the bogey plus Bay, like that was going to be the thing that's the thing Quinn used in their last game, the fourth game of their season series, to force them out of their high wall pick and roll coverage. We saw zero high wall pick and roll coverage tonight, like none. And Bogey and Bay didn't play as much together the second half. They had a long stretch in the first half. But in their minute, they were on together 18 and a half minutes. Hawks were plus eight. They made 19 field goals in 18 and a half minutes, 14 assists. And that doesn't even account for five trips to the free throw line, which is not going to show up as an assist. So 14 assists in those 18 and a half minutes. The Hawks had 12 in the other 29 and a half. So, like, they really moved the ball when those two guys were on. Now, Miami came out in the second half and got much more width in their defensive spacing and really kind of gave the middle to the Hawks and were inviting them into those seams down into sort of the mid-range. And it was a brilliant adjustment because the Hawks couldn't buy a bucket for the first 4 or 5 minutes of the third quarter. So you knew Spo was going to come out with something to help his team. But the one thing Spo could not Dude, this is what kept jumping out at me over and over and over. I'm interesting if you guys had the same experience watching. The Hawks were just so much more athletic than me. Like a ton more athletic. Jalen doing his thing, you know, JC in the fourth quarter. I felt like Quinn had JC on late just because he trusted him not to foul Jimmy a million times. Well, JC did a great job on Jimmy in the fourth quarter. But the offensive, to like Brad's comment earlier, the offensive glasses to me where the athleticism showed up the most. But they were able to kind of get out and push the pace in the first half. Miami controlled the pace in the second half, but they still had their moments in the second half. And I thought when the Hawks would start to lose control of the game, they would have a sequence where their athleticism just overwhelmed Miami, and it got them right back to an 8-point lead or whatever. So I thought the athleticism was the really the difference in this game.
I have a question for Wes that kind of trails that, because I feel like it relates to the athleticism a little bit. Were you surprised, Wes, when Miami sort of deployed Kevin Love as their backup center and, you know, maybe tried some zone stuff to junk it up, but, you know, they didn't, they didn't go to a traditional center. They went to Kevin Love, and I thought, like, I don't know how they're going to match the Hawks bench athleticism if they try to do that. And I was irked with the Hawks for the first couple of minutes of that, because it felt like they weren't getting the ball into the paint. Like, I'm okay with that group shooting threes. That group is full of 3-point shooters, but it just felt like they were getting into threes without getting the ball to the paint first. And I thought that was a loss with Kevin Love at center on the floor. Were you surprised that they did that?
I suppose so. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at it. So they played Bam for 41 minutes. They played Love at the five for 3 minutes and Cody Zeller at the five for 4 minutes. So, I mean, I really think they were just kind of bridging the minutes to get back to Bam. Like, they obviously game plan their entire defense to, you know, funnel stuff to Bam to get him to jump out on stuff, cause havoc, jump in the passing lane. Like, they, you know, I think they, you know, at one point they had, you know, Deadman, he's not on the roster anymore, I don't believe.
That was kind of the end. Yeah. The end of the Deadman era was coming when he kicked the massage gun on the floor.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, not that Deadman's a Bam replacement, but at least defensively, he kind of, you know, is able to provide some kind of resistance in the passing lanes and in the paint. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I think they knew that, you know, listen, we're not going to be able to really execute our defensive game plan without Bam on the floor. So we put Love, just give him a little spell, go zone, like you said. I mean, the Hawks weren't really hitting threes at a super high rate. I mean, they were generating some pretty good looks. Glenn mentioned, you know, they were kind of getting middle pick and roll and then being able to kick it out to the corner. They had a bunch of good corner looks. They hit a few, but they definitely could have hit a few more. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of been the thing with Miami in general. Like, they just, when Bam's off the floor, like their defense is just, you know, they've been looking for that backup center. Right. So, I mean, it's smart for the Hawks to attack them there. You know, like I said, they're able to, the thing with the Hawks, the luxury that the Hawks have is, I mean, you look at their top four guys in the front court, like, we've mentioned the athleticism, but I think they were really smart in, you know, I saw Jalen a few times give up the ball in transition, like we mentioned, but he would continue to cut to the rim. He got a couple of lobs, or he would get a pass and he lobbed to John Collins that one time. So I think they were smart in knowing, like, listen, we got a size advantage. Like, we're going to be able to cut to the rim. We're going to be able to, you know, really exploit our size here, our athleticism, get above the rim and finish. So they were smart and not just, you know, just giving the ball up. Some games we'll see from the Hawks where they'll just give the ball up to Trae Young or DeJounte in transition and then just kind of, you know, fade out to the 3-point line. Like, they were attacking the rim, trying to go for the lobs. If they didn't get the lob, they'd be in good rebounding position. So, you know, obviously bludgeoning them on the rebound. So, I mean, I think, like I said, that's the difference between, you know, the Hawks and the Heat. Like, the Heat have Bam, who's, listen, he's the best front court player in this game. But when he's not on the floor and you don't really have a, you know, a true four next to him, you know, the Hawks were able to just kind of throw waves of guys at him at the front court and just obviously bludgeon them on the offensive rebounds.
Yep. Where else do you want to go with this? Go ahead, Glenn. You were right about AJ not playing. You were right about the Bay line. You talked about a lot of things that actually went down here. AJ not playing, the Bay lineups. What else was Glenn right about? Glenn was right about a lot of things going into this game.
Oh, Glenn's right about stuff? That never happens. That's weird.
Yeah, every once in a while.
My kid.
I think you're on mute, Glenn.
My mic keeps cutting out there. Sorry about that, guys. To me, a lot of that just isn't me being a genius at all, because I'm not exceptionally smart. I went back and watched the fourth game they played against each other, one where Quinn had 2 full days to plan, and I thought that's what we're gonna see. He's gonna deploy shooters, multiple shooters, to try to get him out of the high wall. They're gonna go side pick and roll, and Miami did go back and say we're gonna give you the middle because we're gonna cover all the shooters on the wing and in the corner, and force them to go in there and shoot. But I mean, it was. You know, you think back, and I don't always want to make things sort of going back and relitigating the kind of the Nate era, but Quinn was rolling with Spo, in this game. You know, those 2 timeouts early in the third quarter I thought were critical. But yeah, I mean, deploying multiple shooters, moving the ball, passing the ball, up until about 3 minutes to go in the second quarter, they never tried to dribble the ball through the load up. The loaded up defense that he kind of showed, they passed the ball through around, got easy, got great shots. So the ball movement was just phenomenal. I think Kevin Pelton put out a stat approaching halftime. They already had like 17 assists. They averaged 18 and a half a game in last year's 5-game series. That just tells you kind of all you need to know. But, Brad mentioned earlier, the 3-point shooting, 10 for 41, they didn't lose confidence. Even when Miami kind of raced back into the game, the Hawks were up 20, more than 20 points in the first half. It got all the way down to a 2-possession game. It felt like it was a 2-to-3-possession game most of the second half. And the Hawks just kept working, kept out-physicaling them, like Brad said earlier, out-rebounding them, and just used their athleticism to kind of keep putting pressure on the Heat. And so, I was just teasing out things I saw in that fourth game where they played each other, where Quinn really had a chance to put some of his plan in place. And he went back to a lot of that. And, Spo was ready for – I Spo punted on the high wall, knowing they're going to put a whole bunch of shooting on the floor. And it was fun to watch Quinn and Spo kind of go back and forth, even though from the vantage point of the athleticism stuff, Quinn had the better team, tonight, So that's but Quinn had to keep his team – under control and on plan, because the Hawks, don't have all this the experience and the veteranship that Miami has. So it's just, fun, impressive kind of win all around. And man, to have a second unit that can give you what they gave the Hawks, I mean, it's pretty unique for a team that's not a top 4 team in their own conference. So, that's pretty special.
I thought Tyler made a really good point in a tweet. Shout out to Tyler that Hawks having a great shooting night, obviously, but I felt like there was a connection between the passing and the offensive rebounding, because they were able to sort of keep the Heat busy, keep them in rotation, keep them, any kind of mismatches that arose because of a scrambling switch, you got that mismatch at the glass, and by continuing to pass and play through the offense and keep the floor spaced, those mismatches prolonged long enough so that when the shot went up, the Hawks, had that advantage that they could go and chase the rebound. And a lot of times it was a big on a small, and, because there's only really one big, but sometimes it was a big on a really small, and the Hawks were able to take care of those advantages.
Yeah, Brad, how many times have we seen this year the Hawks can't hold up at the point of attack, get their big man away from the rim, rotate, nobody to rebound. And I think that's exactly what Tyler was teasing out. And I think that was a great observation, but it reminds me a lot of what we saw from the Hawks this year all too often.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've all said it a million times that the perimeter defense has probably been their biggest problem all year long. And it leads to stats that make it look like the bigs are the problem. Like, people always cite points allowed in the paint as a big man stat when it's not always. It kind of, you have to watch what's going on. And, like Wes said at the very beginning, I think they held up well on the perimeter, and that's their X factor all year long. It's been that way all year. That wasn't I wouldn't say that was number one necessarily on the list tonight, but it was, if they don't do that, then they get, everybody else gets thrown off and they're doing different things and they have to kind of just like triage the entire way. It's really hard to play defense when you're just in triage mode all the time. And that's what happens to you when you can't stop anybody on the perimeter. So Boston's a different animal for sure than Miami is on this front. It's gonna be a lot more difficult, but like, it's obviously a good one night sample. I mean, and if they do what they did tonight, they actually have a chance. If they don't, then they're in trouble, obviously, but they're going to have to play attentively. And we joked about it earlier about how tired they looked at certain times. Like, they're gonna have to do this a lot in the next series to be able to do what they did tonight. And, you know, fortunately they'll shoot it better sometimes. I mean, they're not going to always shoot like they did tonight. Like, that's the positive. So you can't take too much from one game, but like, they were able to like fully do that and not at least get through second unit. And look, knock on wood, they're healthy. That's big. It's big to have, like, you can actually game plan with all your guys. I mean, that's the underrated part about that Miami series last year, was that yes, they played terribly, Trey was bad, all this stuff, but like, they were so banged up in that series. Like, Collins couldn't run. Capella missed multiple games, I think. Gallo was Gallo. Bogey's dragging his leg. And right now, again, knock on wood, Hunter looks fine. So, like, they really don't have any injury issues as the series. Like, that's big, especially when you have a firm top nine and your 10th guy is playable. Like, it's like if something happens to somebody, like, they can play AJ and they'll probably feel pretty good about it. So, that's all.
Even Aaron. Supposed to be. They can play Aaron if they need to. Yeah, if they really need better rotation, you know, on the perimeter, they could go to him. I know we're going to record on Boston and Atlanta later on, but you know, we kind of touched on the next series, and this is, and I got to go back and watch some of the, you know, their matchups from this year. But I put this on Twitter. This is, to me, like, where the Hawks maybe have a chance offset what we expect to be a 3-point differential issue for the Hawks. So, in their matchups this year, Celtics outscored the Hawks at the three-point line by 12.7 points a game. The Hawks outscored the Celtics in the paint by 15.4. So they outscored them in the paint more than the Celtics outscored them at the three-point line. Still, Boston, it felt like, controlled all the games. You know, it just kind of felt that way. And so there are other areas where plays have to be better. But I still think to myself, like, if you think back to when the Hawks did better at the point of attack on defense, it's like Luka not going to kill you with his first step. Shea, you know, not going to kill you with his first step. Jimmy, same thing. Lowry, okay. You know, Hero's not even that either. Hero's more craft, right? When I think about Boston, like, Jalen has a pretty good first step, but like, that's not what Tatum gives you. That's not what anyone else really kind of gives you there. So I feel like I want to kind of think on this a little bit, but are the Hawks just flat out more athletic with a fully healthy, fully staffed rotation? Now Robert Williams is an amazing athlete, you know, at the five for them. Jalen's a great athlete, but they're a little bit average, I think, athleticism apart from those two guys, you know. And so it makes me wonder, like, can the Hawks show up with an athleticism presence that might help them do better than the consensus thinks? Anyone feel that way at all looking ahead?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I just think the shooting probably outweighs that by a significant amount. So, I mean, I think it's going to be reasonable that the Hawks are underdogs in this series. Like, I mean, Hawks fans should just revel in this game tonight, but it's one game. There's going to be one game probably in this Boston series where Boston makes 28 threes and the Hawks lose by 30. And like, that's one game.
Game's over in the middle of the quarter.
One game is one game. And yep. You know, that for a team like Boston, by introducing the three-point shot into their arsenal, there's just that much more variance. So it can look really ugly when they get it clicking.
Yeah. Well, good thing nobody melted down on Twitter today, so we can wrap this up soon.
Wait, Oh yeah. Let's circle back to Kevin. Kevin versus the National Reporters. I thought I had like one little jab about how bad National Reporting was today. And then I looked up and like Kevin's got like a 12 tweet thread going about National Reporters today. Kevin, are you still mad online? Good. It's been hours. So you still mad?
Am I still mad? I mean, I don't think that my opinions have changed. So I guess so. It's not like a bubbling, burning flame within me, but, you know, my dissatisfactions linger.
What was the straw that broke the camel's back?
I wouldn't dismiss that report entirely. Like, I read it, and it's like, okay, you know, they say things like Quinn probably has a lot of sway in the organization, and I'm not in my head like, yeah, I think Quinn probably has a lot of sway in the organization. But then there was other stuff where it's like league sources say, and it's like, so okay, the thing that's for me, probably coming from somewhere other than the Hawks, because it would make no sense for anybody within the Hawks to say that. And
yeah. So
I just want people to read it judiciously, and it's hard to do that these days, the way some things are phrased and couched.
Yeah. So it goes from Kevin O'Connor saying everything's on the table, including trading Trey, and like 6 hours, it's the Hawks might trade Trey. The Hawks are thinking about trading Trey.
By the way, one important piece of context, Kevin O'Connor himself, he wrote a story on a video today, literally said, I'd be shocked if they traded Trae Young. That's a direct quote from Kevin O'Connor on a video. Like, you're the one that started this whole thing. You'd be shocked if they traded Trae Young. What are we doing here? We've lost control. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's the one that got me. I was like, all right, I give up. My hands are in the air. I'm done.
All right. Kevin, you spoke for all of us. I want to hear you next, but I want to let you know you found the words that all of us were trying to find, I think, in that thread. So a pat on the back, a Kyle Lowry like hug, and take you on down to the ground with it, and all that sort of stuff. So well
the
done.
The Shams word salad was my favorite part of the whole thing. That was the one that got me from Kevin's rant. Which I think was that tweet? Was that the first tweet? Was the word salad?
That was the tweet before the thread. So it was its own separate entity. And then I felt like I needed to explain myself, because it just felt like such an unsolicited attack unless I said what was really on my mind. And so then I had to get it was my muse, that tweet, because I felt like it was unfair unless there was more context.
Yeah, I mean, the part of it is just that there was nobody's that really that interested in the play-in. There was a vacuum that had to be filled. Kevin kind of tipped the first domino, I think we could say. Kevin O'Connor, not our Kevin, tipped the first domino. And then like, oh, we got to fill space. It's sort of, I equated it to all of the jujitsu discussion on the ESPN broadcast on Sunday. Yeah, because like the game just didn't matter. None of the regulars were playing. So like, oh no, let's talk about jujitsu for 15 minutes, you know? And whereas it's like, oh, the Hawks play on the national TV. We don't really have anything else interesting to say. So let's talk about this nothing thing. Wes, did you see anything differently than what we've all kind of hit on here?
No, I mean, I'm with you guys. I mean, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I think so obviously Kevin O'Connor kind of has his own sort of way of, you know, reporting some of the things he hears from around the league and things of that nature, but I think it's something that's bigger than him. It's not like he was necessarily trying to stir up Trae Young rumors, like, you know, let's contemplate the Hawks trading Trae. Like I said, like Brad brought up, he said on his own podcast or wherever he's speaking, like, I don't expect it, or it'd be, you know, highly unlikely for them to actually go through with it. But it's kind of this ecosphere of, okay, you know, one person is reporting something and another outlet picks up on this one quote within it. You know, obviously we talk about like trying to maintain context as far as where it's coming from, but, you know, it kind of just takes this one outlet to aggregate this quote that says, you know, everything's on the table. You know, you kind of infer that, oh, well, you know, must be Trae Young is on the table. That's kind of been a, you know, juicy topic. Sort of plays into the whole narrative of, well, you know, Trae Young he's on his third HUD coach at this point. There's obviously discussion of like how much did he play into the two head coaches before him in that happening. So, you know, it's beyond just one guy. You know, beyond just Kevin O'Connor, it's beyond this one guy. It's this kind of ecosphere of, you know, like you said, Glenn, like, hey, we're in the play-in. Like, you know, obviously these games are important, but, you know, the playoffs don't start till Saturday. You know, we've got the regular season ended on Sunday, and the playoffs don't start till Saturday. We've got a whole week of, you know, we got the play-in games here and there, but we definitely a whole kind of vacuum of, news people are trying to consume at this time. It's easy for an outlet to pick up on one quote and run with it, and another outlet pick up on with another quote. And it's kind of sad that it kind of bubbles up to, as Kevin mentioned, like national reporters who should kind of know better, I would say, or maybe should be above the fray, but they're not necessarily above the fray as far as, you know, they're trying to obviously portray, you know, a certain side of it, to some of the things they're hearing from the league, from executives, or from certain sources. So it's just silly season. You just have to take everything with a grain of salt. Like, listen, like, Trae Young's in the middle of a play-in. He, you know, he helped the Hawks win today. Hey, like, Trae Young's not thinking about.
Wes, don't you also think that it was also sort of an aggravating factor was the fact that everybody thought the Hawks would lose today, and that conversation ahead of this game tonight would set them up to talk about the Hawks failed, they're going to trade Trae Young. Brad, I think Brad's agreeing over there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Hawks were pretty big underdogs as far as, I mean, even if the Vegas line wasn't that big, you think in a one game sort of scenario, like, yeah, certainly. And obviously, I mean, you know, on some level, the Hawks, even Trae Young, had the season they've had has been pretty chaotic. They've invited some criticism. Some of it hasn't been warranted, but yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, listen, like, Trae Young's a professional. Like, you know, he's not going to, I think the implication that Trae Young would stir up anything like at this time, and, you know, all these other things, like, listen, he's, you know, when you take speculation from league sources and sort of, you know, put that out there in this environment, like you said, maybe it would make for a good story if the Hawks lost, and, you know, now there's all these, you know, speculation and circulation.
Juicy stuff.
Yeah. Juicy stuff, right? It's just, like I said, it's just silly season. Like, there's just this content vacuum that people try to fill, and you have to kind of know which actors are acting rationally and which actors are there in the universe.
Kevin or Brad, I'm interested, like, Rudy Gobert has to be so thankful that everybody talked about Trae Young today, because Rudy Gobert is not playing a game tonight, and it's like everybody moved on from Rudy.
Yeah. Right now, the Timberwolves are up 12.
They might win, and that makes it even worse for Rudy, because they went without him. It's like, oh man.
The Trae story gave cover to a lot of people, but yeah, tonight's win was important for Trae just because that came up. It was just kind of silly that he was answering questions at a shoot around for a play-in game about that kind of stuff. Like, it's just like time and place. Like, it was just kind of ridiculous. But like, I asked Quinn the other day about, you know, DeJounte's presence in this kind of game, you know, given that essentially they went out and got him in the offseason because they needed that type of player to deal with a Miami. And he, you know, he kind of poo-pooed it, but he also said, yeah, this is kind of a flashpoint moment for DeJounte and for the team. When I like that phrase, because, you know, it was sort of the crucible of, hey, this is the guy you went out for this reason. And, you know, even though it's one game, he kind of made the team successful for that one game. He was a key ingredient. So I think it was really important that DeJounte's presence there, you know, was evident tonight, and that Trae didn't completely die of fatigue by the end of the game.
Yeah. And the nice thing to pull it all together, DeJounte made big shots in the fourth quarter. When things got a little fragile, he came up with a big shot. But you never saw DeJounte on, like, a defensive assignment. Like, we saw a lot this year when Hunter was out or whoever. Bay took Butler. JC took Butler. DeJounte was able to have a manageable defensive assignment tonight because they had Jalen, JC, Butler, Bay, and – that makes a huge difference on getting the value you want from DeJounte is not giving him too big of a defensive role.
Well, very good. I think it's time to wrap. And in terms of podcast content, I'm sure Brad will podcast 10 or 14 times this week. I'll have Glenn on again sometime this week to talk about Boston. And
can't wait.
We could do a variety group group number again at some point in the future. I appreciate you all jumping on at the last minute to hash out tonight's game.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.